So, hello everybody. This is our first audio-only Nerdatorium podcast. We've abandoned video. We're sticking just to the audio for now.
Yeah.
And as usual, we've got Ben Hoffman, head ninja of the Nerdatorium, master of life, liberty, and nerdiness.
Also pursuits in various forms.
This is true. And special guest today that's joining us is Mr. Paul Wycott.
Hello.
And so Paul is collaborating with us on this project, People in Motion. It's a film project. We somehow got hooked up, gosh, it's been like, what, 5, 6 months ago?
Yeah, I think so.
And we had this crazy idea, and Paul just was really, really gracious, and he's like, all right, it's a crazy idea, but yeah, man, whatever, let's make this trailer and see what happens.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember posting on PK Cali, and no one was really responding, because it was like, this is just the trailer, and it's not paid, and everyone was like, oh, it's not paid, it's whack, and I was like, nah, let's give this a chance. Turned out, really good decision. Happy.
It's been a really bizarrely easy collaboration.
Right.
For whatever reason, it's just worked out with all the different personalities. Shane was our casting director. We just had a podcast with him the other day, and yeah, I don't know how he did it, but he managed to find you and all these other just incredible athletes. And you guys are all so different, you know. And I think that once he found you, you sort of led us to a couple of the other athletes that we're collaborating with. And then he also found some people that had less of a parkour, more of a gymnastics, acrobatic sort of background, like David Agajanian.
Yeah.
But how's it been, man? What are your thoughts so far?
It's been a lot of fun so far. Definitely a start to a sick experience. I know, so far everything we've done, even filming the trailer, was super fun, so I'm looking forward to actually the full project. It'll be fun. Traveling will be awesome.
Like, yeah, it's going to be a cast of characters. Everybody's got legitimate personalities on them. No one just sits in the corner quietly.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be hilarious. Like, just imagining with, like, especially Lonnie and Jacob, just people I've known forever. And yeah, and you've met Jacob. He's really excitable, I guess. He's really energetic. But if you've ever seen him tired or really energetic, it'll be fun day.
Is it kind of the same thing for him?
He's pretty energetic all the time, and then he gets really hyped up, but then when he's really tired, he just, like, laughs at everything. But he does that all the time anyway, so it'll be a crack up.
More intensity.
Yeah. It'll keep our energy level up for sure.
Cool.
Yeah, these things always have a way of just developing sort of a life of their own, right? The tour and the camaraderie and just having all these personalities where you experience every possible emotion, from joy and happiness to frustration, and you're just like, get me away from these people, give me some room to breathe. But I think that overall these experiences are always just a good time, and especially when you're creating something, right? Like whether it's a film project or something else, having something to point at and be like, oh wow, yeah, we all came together and we made this thing. Yeah, it's a crazy thing. So, are you excited about Burning Man?
Yeah, that should be really cool. I hear from a lot of people who go to Burning Man type places that they've never been to Burning Man because it's hard to get to and they wouldn't be prepared. And so I'm really stoked that I get this opportunity, just because it's like something that even people who are interested in it, besides like going as part of a project, they're like, oh, I wish I could go. So should be really fun. The pictures look amazing. All the art, like, I've met a few people who go to Burning Man, like, every year. Just recently, I met them and I talked to them, and they said just, like, oh, you'll love it, you know. But they were pretty wacky people, which is awesome, because, like, I'm all for meeting interesting people. So that should be cool.
Yeah, for the people at home who might be listening to this who don't know about Burning Man is this really bizarre event that happens every year in the Black Rock Desert of Nevada, where a temporary city is built from nothing to roads, infrastructure, etc. in 1 week. So it goes from nothing to an entire city, 1 week. The event lasts for a week. There's 50 to 60,000 people there. And then at the end of that week, everything is broken down in 1 week. So within 3 weeks of starting, there's not a single nut or bolt or cigarette or anything left in the desert. It's as if nobody had ever been there.
Yes, moop, right? Matter out of place.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And the thing about Burning Man is
best acronym ever.
Yep, moop.
it's an exploration in radical self. What would you call it? Radical
self-reliance.
Yeah, it's definitely self-reliance, self-expression, really. And that's sort of what People in Motion is about. It's this idea that hey, there's a whole world all around you waiting for you to interact with it. You can do anything you want in the space around you. And people forget that. You know, they just sort of...
Yeah.
They get in line behind the person in front of them, and they just do what the person in front of them does, and just kind of become part of the hive. Whereas...
We were watching a nature documentary last night with our friend Byron, and there's this line of caterpillars, like, crossing the desert in Africa or something. But they were just, like, it was, like, one caterpillar was followed by another caterpillar, like you know, ass and face, with like, you know, crawling along, and it's just this line of them, and then they kind of panned out, and it actually ended up the last one, or first one was following the last one, so it was just a circle, and they were going nowhere. And it's kind of, it seems like an apt metaphor for, like,
yeah, no, it really is. Life. There's this thing called the, what is it? It's the ant death spiral. So in an ant colony, I think it's when a queen dies, the pheromones and the hormones that they're giving off are all mixed up, and so the ants don't know what to do, so they, like, one will just start following another one in hopes that they'll get somewhere good. But the guy in the front is just, he's following the guys next to him, and eventually they'll go in this big spiral, and they'll all sort of clump together, and they'll just all die in this massive, big spiral of ants.
Wow, that's hectic.
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit strange when you look at most people, you know, sort of as we get older, we're sort of taught, don't play on this, don't do that, you know, don't, just conform, just act like everyone else. It's like, ooh, I don't know that that's a good idea, you know? Like,
make sure the queen's alive.
Yeah. It reminds me of, fish that, in defense, when the predator's nearby, they all clump together into that giant, like, a giant column of fish, and they all swim really close. It's like a vortex. And it works for a lot of bigger fish, because they can't really penetrate the vortex, because they'll just get clobbered in their sides. But it doesn't work
for whales.
Yeah, it doesn't work for whales, because they can just go through it, and it also doesn't work for, getting away from nets, because if they see fishermen, they just, like, it's their defense, so they go into this vortex, but the net just gets them all at the same time. It's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Thanks for boosting our
So, going back to Burning Man, it's just placed unlike anything that you would normally see in modern society. You've got people who are dressed head to toe in blue paint, right? Mm-hmm. Or people who just are, they've completely created their own characters, and they go up out to what they call the playa, the desert, and they have new personas and new personalities, and they experiment with interacting with people in new and interesting ways, right? So often you'll have these people who will build art cars, these massive three-story ships with wheels, right? And they just go through the desert on this massive art car, inviting anyone on to have interesting conversations, and they'll give them water and food, and not ask for anything in return.
Yeah.
And they just say, hey, you know, enjoy the space. Nobody made money for this. Nobody is getting paid for this. This is just to explore an alternative way of sort of being. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting to actually have hardcore athletes and gymnasts out there who can actually really interact with that space in a way that most normal people can't.
Yeah, well, it's cool that you said that, just those last two statements, just enjoy the space and really interact with the space in a different way. But it's interesting, the pairing between Burning Man and something like parkour, because just like you were saying before, matter out of place, like, they enjoy the space, but they don't want to destroy it. They just keep it as it is, you know, they keep it at the quality level they found it when they got there, and their only trace, so to speak, was whatever they did in that area, and when they're gone, like, they didn't leave anything. And parkour is kind of like that too.
Yeah.
We love enjoying the space around us, the environment, but we always try and sustain it too, because, like, our history there should just be a path. It should just be a little line that we trace through that, and that's the memory, not some marking on a wall or something like that.
Yeah, you know, when we were filming the trailer, we were really impressed with how cognizant you were of the space. You're like, oh yeah, here's some flower beds, we don't want to hurt the flowers, you know, we're just going to stick to this spot, because I used to skate, right, and we would just destroy everything.
Yeah.
It's like, alright, let's hit this ledge, or there's chunks of ledge flying. It's like, it's fine, you know. But no, you guys have a genuine respect, and this is sort of a reoccurring theme, is that it seems like the parkour community specifically is just so open to new people and so respectful of people in general.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, a lot of groups I've found that aren't like that. Not parkour groups, just like in other sports, people come from other sports into the parkour community and they say, oh, this is really open. And I think one of the reasons is because with something as new as parkour, it hasn't really been around in the United States that long, and so it's a really new thing, and everyone knows because they've been there, where it's like, I have no idea what I'm doing at this point. And it would have been nice for a lot of, like, the veteran trainers, so to speak, to have someone there besides a video online. And so I don't know, newcomers come, and it's just like you want to help them because you see yourself to some extent. But yeah, it's definitely, it grows. It's really, I don't know, it comes back. You just help someone out, newcomers, and they become your best friends too. So most of my best friends are from the parkour community.
And how satisfying is parkour?
Very. And it's like, to sum up, it's extremely satisfying. Like, I don't know, all the accomplishments of my life that came from other things, like, say, school assignments or something, which I didn't always feel so happy about completing, but the ones I did take pride in, I don't know, it's, parkour is different. Even with different sports, too, you can be really satisfied that you played a good, like, tennis match or something like that, but I don't know, something about parkour just, like, screams at me, at least. It's just like, yes, you know.
You know, again, going back to skating, it's really the only thing I have that is somewhat similar, in that it was so viscerally satisfying. And a lot of that, for me, came from a couple of things. It had to do with camaraderie, having people around you that were sort of going through this idea of there's this obstacle, and we all interact with it, and we sort of learn and grow from each other. Another part was fear, overcoming fears, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get this very real reward when you can overcome a fear, right? And then you add a little bit of skill on top of that, where you actually do need to develop these skills in combination with your ability to control your body, get over fears, and then you add that camaraderie element where you actually get over all this, you accomplish this thing where you've gotten past your fear, you have the technical skill to accomplish it, and you add a dose of not only you're celebrating, but all your friends just,
yeah!
When you actually do this, and it's this indescribable feeling of complete joy.
It really is. Yeah, it's interesting the analogy, or not analogy, but just the comparison between skating and parkour, because a lot of people see it that way just because it's an urban thing, first of all, and age group wise, it's generally, you know, teens to almost 20s, and it's male dominated. And like, a lot of people in parkour will say, no, it's not a good comparison because, like, the skaters have the attitude, but the way you see it is really accurate, I think, because it's true. The overcoming fear, like, a lot of the time you see skaters and they just keep trying something over and over, and the method might be a little different in terms of, like, trying a new move, but the spirit is the same, you know what I mean? I don't know, people tend to miss that because they say, oh, no, skaters are, like, disrespectful, but it's not true. Like, I mean, obviously there are disrespectful skaters, but there are disrespectful free runners too. I don't know. I think it's a good comparison when you look at it that way, because it is, you try something, you really want to overcome that fear, and you don't give up, you know, and you kind of build from each other.
It's interesting, though, in terms of the perception of skaters being disrespectful, skateboarders and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm just missing it, but I've never gone to, like, a shopping mall or, like, a strip mall and seen, like, a no parkour sign, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, the people kind of come down on kids that skateboard and rollerblade and do whatever, right?
Yeah.
You know, where they kind of ban it, where, you know, I mean, you know, you guys get harassed if you kind of go on roost or something, but, you know, doesn't seem like there's any institutional resistance to parkour yet.
Yeah, granted, I mean, it's been around for not long enough for it to be really recognized, so I'm guessing there will be, but, I don't know, I think the main difference between parkour and skating is, like, a lot of people in parkour try to have the same mentality of their training as they do in real life, so it's like, whereas skaters may not have that, you know, I mean, I know some skaters and they do, they're nice people, for sure, but, I don't know, it's just a kind of a respect thing, because you end up trying to respect the environment, and...
Yeah, it's very obvious, you know, As a former person who used to skate, there's definitely a massive difference in how the parkour community interacts with the world and with the space that they play in. It's for us. But to go back on how these things are similar, not just parkour and skating or anything that has a title, right? I think that there's the reason these things are so viscerally satisfying, it comes down to this very innate human need that we have to challenge ourselves and to push ourselves and to express ourselves creatively. You know, I think creativity has sort of been looked at and frowned upon in the last few decades, where it's like, oh, look at that, you know, artsy-fartsy person. They'll never survive in this world of industry. But it's like, hold on a second. Look at some of the people who are physically artistic, where they're moving through space and time and in difficult physical ways, but also creatively. and you'll find a person who is just so satisfied and so happy. And you look at some of these people
and
who
health,
work
like
in
people,
yeah, and they're
who
extremely
are really actually surviving, whereas the other people are kind of falling apart.
Well, yeah, you look at a lot of people in big corporate jobs, and I was very guilty of this. You know, I worked for Microsoft for 3 years, and I was falling apart. I started in great shape, really happy, really healthy, and I started working these 80-hour weeks, right, where it was like, I wasn't sleeping, I was eating garbage, I was putting on weight, I was getting depressed, I wasn't moving around, and like my life was miserable. I got to the point where I was like, okay, I'm going to take a long walk off a short pier because I've had enough.
Because I really like swimming.
Yeah, it was like, okay, there's another way. So, you know, we were fortunate. We started a side business. It worked. We were able to escape the corporate world. But in this whole process, it's really sort of like a double-edged sword. On one hand, it's sort of rediscovering, you know, that, hey, what's really important is being satisfied in a way that we need to be as human beings. And the only way for some people like me, and I think for like you, to get that satisfaction is to do challenging things where you're overcoming your fears and you're interacting with spaces creatively with people that you respect and admire. And when you can do that, you're almost at peace. Like, you can't help but just be happy.
Yeah, true. I was going to say, it's a comparison I thought of the other day was, like, think of dance, and especially modern dance, and like, you can, most dancing obviously is to music, but you can have seen modern dance pieces that are completely silent, and for them it's a complete expression of what they're feeling. And I feel, at least for me, parkour is the same. It's, I don't know, it's one of those things that I do feel at peace, and I do feel most free when I'm training, because it's just me, first of all. It's like nothing, no help from anything, so it's just my own human body, and it's the one thing in my life that I feel like I do have control over, because obviously there are plenty of things in life people don't have control over, and everyone has to find some way to cope with that, like hobbies or just friends, or, you know, being a strong individual, you know, a lot of different ways. But parkour is that one thing that I can control and just create and express. I don't know, it's interesting, it's similar to dance too, because at least for me, training, depending on my mood, I'll move in different ways, and that's very similar to like modern dance. I don't know, it's really artsy when you look at it that way, but it's interesting, because I mean, a lot of people said parkour was like martial arts in terms of the philosophy, but I kind of think it's more like dance.
And dance is an interesting thing. You know, when you talk about dance, most people will be like, oh, you know, it's a girl in a cocktail dress and a guy in a zoot suit spinning around.
Yeah.
It's like, well, there's some metaphors in dance that are really interesting. You know, you've got this idea of a lead and a follow. And you can look at this in terms of, okay, you have certain sort of lead characteristics in your life and other parts of your character that might be more follow-related. And when you interact with a space, for example, a space will present a whole, right, or an emptiness that you can move into and fill, mm-hmm. just as a lead dancer can create sort of a hole in a space for the follow to fill, right? And whether you're dancing with someone or just dancing alone, your ability to, it all comes back to that, like, creatively moving through space. You know, it's wild. You leave somebody alone with good music long enough, and they won't even realize that they will start dancing. You know, and sometimes, like, you'll hear a good song, you'll be, like, moving, and you're like, oh,
yeah.
I hope nobody saw me. I was, like, just, you know, dancing and being silly. But there's something about that. It's just, it is our human nature to move around creatively.
Yeah, people move to rhythms. We're based off of rhythms, you know, heartbeat, wavelengths in your brain. It's innate to follow a pattern like that. And other animals do that, too. Like, you've seen the videos of birds or parakeets that bounce to music.
You see the parakeet that dances to I Whip My Hair Back and Forth.
Yeah.
It was a cockatoo.
Yeah, that's funny.
It was ridiculous.
But definitely, like, something about the rhythm of music. I don't know, I don't train with music because it's a little awkward having earbuds in, and you can't really hear subtle differences in, like, footing and stuff. If something like gravel, you step on it, you want to hear that, so you know it's a little funky to land on or step on. But, listening to music and then training, you definitely have a rhythm that you kind of put into your emotions. I don't know, you just, if you do a move correctly, it just feels like you hit, like, a good beat. Like, if you're trying to do drums or something, play drums, and you have to keep a certain tempo, it's similar, it feels that way. Like, okay, do this jump, do this vault, and then do this cat leap right here, and climb up, and it all has to be kind of at the same tempo, so it doesn't get all jarred and messed up.
How would you say the parkour. Do you call what you do parkour? Do you call it movement? What do you?
I generally call it parkour. Not many people really care about the difference between parkour and free running nowadays. Okay. It's really all just movement, you know, especially to me, because everyone I've seen who really has spent time arguing the differences between everything, it's like, I don't see you doing either, you know? So just have fun with it. Like,
that's too funny. So when you're moving, right, how has this type of movement changed the way that you see the world?
Besides the obvious, like, architectural differences that I see in buildings, like, differences between the way I see it and the way someone else sees it, I don't know. For one thing, it made me think how other people see the world and what they focus on, because generally I see paths and what I would do in that space. You know, I'd be like, oh, I could do this move, or I could train here, and that would be interesting. But if you don't do parkour, I wonder how people look at it that way. Like, do they focus on colors or designs or patterns? I don't know. That's interesting. So it's weird. I guess it didn't really change the way I see the world too much, but it changed the way I think about the world and the way other people see it.
Well, you were saying something interesting about hearing the sound of gravel and the sound of what you're interacting with.
Yeah.
Are those senses and those awarenesses heightened as you're focused on moving?
Definitely. Yeah, especially before and after jumps, you always want to check your landings. And gravel, you know, when I was a kid, gravel was sick just because it makes this, like, crunch, crunch noise. You know, it was fun. And, like, same with dried leaves. But, I don't know, as much as I like those noises, you got to be careful and think, like, okay, like, that's going to be a sketchy landing. So, you know, land softly or whatever like that. Or just even the different types of walls, when you land on them, they make different noises against your feet. And it's kind of interesting. It's kind of cool.
Do you notice anything specifically that really stands out right before you're about to do something that sort of is at the max of your abilities?
Yeah, there's a lull in thought. Like, that sounds a little weird. Like, just don't think about it, just do it. But it's not like that. It's more so, you have to kind of focus on something. And for me, I always reach a point where right before I'm about to do it, because I contemplate it, I decide whether or not I'm going to do it, and if I decide that I am going to do it, I reach this point after I focus that it's just like, okay. And, you know, do it because you want to, not because you feel like you need to. And when I always think about that, it's just like this total calm, and you're just like, cool. It's just kind of like walking down over the street. You know, it's just something that you decided to do, and you don't make a big deal out of it, because it's just something you've trained for, something you want to do, and something, like, in terms of the fear, something that you just overcame. And, like, I don't know, that feeling I haven't gotten from anything else besides parkour.
If you end up, you know, bailing on something, is there any element of kind of having that thought process, or, you know, not having that calm and, like, having your mind kind of get in the way of it? Does that...
It depends on, like, what happened exactly. I mean, a lot of bails, most common, it's like, oh, that... Okay, what went wrong? Most of the time it's, oh, no, I definitely know I can make it now. I just have to change this a little bit and tweak it. But, no, it definitely is more serious injuries. It will jar with your mind, but that's just another thing that you have to get over. You know, you just have to say, okay, well, I tried to do it and that happened, so try it again. Just, like, think about it, you know. Yeah. You can't just be like, oh, no, I bailed and now I'm all freaked out, even though it is freaky.
Does ego ever come into play?
It does, but it really shouldn't. Like, it's one of those things, it's a battle, definitely, because there's a lot of things that I look at, and I'm like, dang, I know I could do that. Like, I absolutely know I could do that, but it's just super sketchy. And sometimes I'll just walk away, because I'm like, yeah, it's not worth the risk. But in the back of my head, it's always like, you know you can do that. Like, why aren't you doing it? You know, like, parkour's your thing. You should be just all out. You don't worry about other things, but... I don't know. Yeah, it does come into play, but I kind of force it out most of the time just for safety. It should be about just, like, a genuine will to train and keep going and, like, explore yourself and your capabilities, not, like, doing something just to be able to say you did it, whether it's saying to someone else you did it or saying to yourself. You know, it's not about that.
So, setting ego literally to the side for a second and answering this question without... any thought to ego is interesting, because you have to realize that you are significantly better than most of the people who are around you. You have to realize you have a certain level of skill which is extremely difficult and rare to attain. I mean, even people in the community will look at the things that you do and be like, whoa, he's got go-go gadget legs. How is he doing that? How is that possible? I mean, you have to know that.
Yeah, to some extent, I don't know, I try not to look at it that way just because everyone's good at something. I just happen to be parkour and something that not a lot of people get into. But I don't know, I just look at it, that's the way things turned out. I think a lot of people could be at the same level, so to speak, that I am. Just, I train more often, for one. Like, my job revolves around training as well, so I have more opportunity to train. But for the people that I see who do train hard, like, even if the newcomers, like a friend of mine, Mark, he's only 14, but he trains really hard, and he's definitely going to be as good as I am. Probably before, like, my age, you know what I mean? Because he has the same base, or he has a base to train with, but I don't know. I think a lot of people could be really, really good if they just put their mind to it.
So when you think about good, is good about things that less and less people can do because they're extremely challenging, or is it a combination of fear plus challenging? How do you look at this idea of good?
It's a combination, yeah, definitely what moves you can do, but really how you train as well. Like, mostly, personally, when I see people who are good or not, like, even if you're talented, I'll say, yeah, you're skilled, but I wouldn't say you're necessarily good if you don't have a good training attitude.
So there's a mental game beyond the physical game.
Yeah, yeah. Like, a lot of people are talented, but they're in parkour for the wrong reasons because they like showing off or something like that. And
so it's about ego for them.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, that's their choice, obviously, but I think it's dangerous. Doing parkour is one of those things that you don't want to have an ego in. Obviously, it's something that people like watching, but if you train for that and if that's your goal, then you're always, at one point, people are going to get bored because they've seen your moves before and you're going to have to do new things. And I don't know, it's like a slippery slope because people will like big things, you know, it's like the amplitude of it is just huge, and so you end up doing bigger and bigger tricks till you get injured. Things like that happen on the parkour TV shows, and I don't know, to me it's more impressive when people are creative with their movement, because you can be creative in a billion different ways, and it doesn't even have to be a big move, it can just be a creative move or a really sick move, or just like, wow, I totally didn't ever think of moving that way in that, you know, environment. And I think that is more impressive than any big trick you can throw and manage to land.
So how do you see your movement evolving?
When I first started training, I was all about the big moves, actually. I just tried to do, like, really big things. It's like, oh, man, this is going to be, like, a lot of fun, or, like, that would be so sick. And that definitely changed after my leg break, the double fracture in my fibula. And after that, my style became a little more, like, creative, just because it was more flow-based. It was smaller movements, especially during recovery period. And up and just recently, I've been getting, like, size back, you know, bigger things, but really careful about it. I don't know, my style's more, I'd say more dynamic now. I try and make it more of a one long fluid motion rather than hit this big trick, you know. It's, I don't know, I feel like I have a more accurate view of what parkour is to me now.
Is that do you think that's something that people who practice parkour for a while sort of naturally come to, where, I mean, you had an injury that kind of catalyzed your change in viewpoint, but is it, mm-hmm. even if you weren't injured, do you think that kind of getting away from these big tricks and going to more of like a compositional sort of thing where you're just working on moving these flow through space?
In most cases, yes. Like, a lot of people, their styles will just evolve because they tend to realize that, oh, I'm just doing this one trick and there's nothing in between, or their parkour isn't functional, like they can do one thing after another, but if they actually had to move fast through a space, they wouldn't know how to link it. Mm-hmm. And they just kind of get caught up and they stutter step, and I don't know, I've seen a lot of people's styles evolve over the years just in the parkour community here in San Diego, and I'd say definitely, yeah, people start flowing more, and they step away from the bigger tricks because they realize it's not worth the risk. And I think there's something more satisfying in just a more rounded movement than just one thing. I think people can take more from it.
To the other people that we're coming with, you know really, really well, Lonnie and Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to get your perspective on them really quick. So we met up and did a podcast, or half a podcast, with Jacob. Our battery died.
So, that would happen with Jacob. That's hilarious.
Halfway through. So, but you know, the guy is just such a character, and he's got such an interesting perspective on movement. He's all about quadrupedal movement, about understanding how each and every single one of his muscles and joints works. He was telling us a story how he's training his neck muscles so that he can do a headstand just on the top of his head. Without anything else, and just stay there for as long as he can. And I guess he can do this for a significant amount of time now.
Yeah.
And his goal is to do a back, what do you call it, like a backhand spring without the hands, a back head spring.
Oh, right.
Like,
yeah.
He sees some Shaolin monk doing it off of a wood floor where he can flip back, spring off of his head, and then land on his feet.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I don't even know what to say. Yeah. What was the question?
So tell us about Lonnie and your perspective. Not Lonnie. Tell us about Jacob and your perspective, because I know he does a lot of this quadrupedal movement, a lot of stuff that's very unorthodox.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'd imagine it's unorthodox.
Yeah, a lot of people don't train like that, especially with quadrupedal. Most people use that kind of movement as conditioning, just to strengthen. But I don't know. I think it's lent a huge style to his movement. I don't know whether that was his goal or not. It's added a lot of strength, for one, and a lot of stability also. It's interesting. A lot of people don't train that. And, I mean, obviously we use our arms a lot to climb and to vault, but to use all fours balanced like that, it gives you way more balance, way more air awareness to some extent. Jacob has the cleanest front flips of anyone I know. Like, they're just ridiculously clean, and it's his air awareness is just like perfect. I've seen him do an elevator, which is like, if there's a wall, you step on the side of the wall, but you jump up and over and you flip over like a front flip. And he did one off a balcony wall, so it was like a drop on the other side onto grass. He goes and his foot slips on the takeoff. It slips like a good 6 inches down on the wall. And in the middle of it, he's like, oh shit, I slipped, but he still tucks and lands perfectly just because he feels it. He feels how he's slipping and already knows, okay, just tuck a little tighter or whatever. And, he just lands it super clean. But I think a lot of that is just because he does movement that other people don't do.
One of the things that he was telling us is that when he started, he just wanted to go out and be a ninja. Like, he had no idea.
Yeah.
He's like, ninjas are kind of cool. I'm sure, why not? I'll go out and play around.
Yeah.
And you've seen him go from that to where he is today.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, he's super funny. It's funny, too, because, like, that's kind of how I started as well. Just, like, being like, oh, this is cool. Ninja flips and, like, some video game. You know, I played Prince of Persia. And I was like, I'm totally going to do that. But once you find out it's real, you're like, oh, this is serious stuff. Like, this is awesome, you know? But it's funny.
It's funny because you're the second person to have mentioned Prince of Persia. Are you talking about, like, the older, like, 2D one or the
for me, the 3D one, just like the PlayStation, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because it kind of seems like that line of games has really inspired a lot of people to do things in the real world.
Yeah,
which is
yeah,
kind of a scary thought because generally, you know, you shouldn't be doing what you do see in video games because
Grand Theft Auto or something like that.
Well, even if it's, even if it's not morally questionable, just like the kind of like, I can fall 40 feet and be fine. Obviously, you know, the physics just are made up.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
So it's interesting that it actually is translated for a lot of people into a real life aspiration and practice.
Yeah, it's uncommon that that happens.
So speaking of sort of the mainstream media and mainstream gaming, because Prince of Persia is a pretty mainstream game, how do you see sort of the way that parkour is blossoming affecting just society as a whole? Because it's growing, there's no question about it.
Yeah, there's definitely an influence. It's obviously, it hits the media pretty hard. Like, it turns into an entertainment thing, whether that's live performance or in TV shows. There's numerous TV shows and commercials that have parkour featured in it. And games, you know, there's games based off of parkour, and like the motion capture is parkour for the video game characters. But if you look at what it's mostly used for, it's just the like, oh, this is something cool to watch at aspect. You know, it had, nothing has really captured it yet. as its true form. You know, it's kind of like a performer and seeing them do whatever they were doing. That's one aspect of them, but what that performance meant to them and whatever type of movement or show it was, why do they do that, and you know what makes them tick, and you can see the performance, but you don't know the person. And so it's similar. You can see what parkour is and see how flashy it looks sometimes, but you don't know why people train. So that's one thing people in motion is going to do that other things have not.
So maybe we'll kind of be able to pull off like a behind the music sort of thing. Paul Wycott was a young man in San Diego before.
So, yeah, something like that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because our goal when we set out with this was really just to do one thing, to inspire people to look at the world around them and see the possibilities, right? And sort of behind that idea is, okay, once you see the possibilities, if you actually just play with the world around you, you can get real visceral joy out of just interacting with the world around you. Mm-hmm. And it can be simple, right?
Yeah.
It can be so simple. Climb a tree, you know? Just interact with things around you a little differently. Roll around in the grass. Have some fun. You know, you don't have to follow everybody on the sidewalks and, you know, use doors like everyone else. You can play. You know, I think that people forget that it's okay to play. Maybe that happens in sort of that transition in school, right, where you go from elementary to middle school and you no longer have a playground.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where it happens. There's definitely a clear cutoff. Where you look at it and like, oh, dude, we can jump on this, we can go on this, and we can have a blast. And I think a lot of adults are like, oh, I would break if I... Is that because you're getting older, or are you feeling older because you stopped playing, because you stopped exercising and moving with the world around you?
Yeah. Social stigmas have a huge amount to do with that, obviously, and I don't know. I think the base thing is, like, all kids want to climb on stuff. They like being up high. Well, not all kids, like, you know, but a lot of them, they like climbing on stuff and seeing how high they can get in a tree or something like that. And a main thing that stops them is parents are always concerned, obviously, and so they'll stop that, but they don't. I think a lot of parents and a lot of like social figures, like security people or anyone who's liable of a certain property, for example, they won't say, hey, be careful because that's dangerous, but keep doing what you're doing. Just be safe about it. They say, hey, don't do that. That's wrong. You know, I think that's
so weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it is super weird. Like, it's weird to think that people will sit on benches, but they won't sit on, like, a tree stump or in a tree, you know? Like, if you want to rest, you see, like, I don't know, I think trees are sick spots to just hang out and, like, you know, talk. I'd love to have a conversation with a friend in a tree. Like, I've done that multiple times. I don't know, Josh Hill from 24/7 Magazine, he takes naps in trees. And, like, I don't know, I think that's a really natural thing to do. It's as natural as we are, like, despite the fact that we wear clothes and shoes and everything like that. I mean, trees are there. None of we're there. It's, like, nature. But, I don't know, it's weird.
I think people, like, I wouldn't take a nap in a tree, I'd fall out, right?
It's because you didn't grow up that way.
Well, one, you didn't grow up that way, and also because they don't have any trust in their kind of natural balance and ability to manage their space. So they just think, well, they're this kind of, like, dumb block that, well, if they fall asleep, will fall out of a tree. But, I mean, if you fall asleep and you start kind of, like, leaning a little, you'll wake up and, like, whoa, better not fall, right?
Because
your body... generally speaking, like, your body...
Yeah.
Like, your body knows its orientation, and, like, it knows when it's moving, and, like, it, you know, you aren't just the sort of, like, brain in a box that walks around. It's a more tightly integrated system than I think most people realize, and that's something that, you know, you and Jacob and all these guys really are in touch with a lot that people miss out on.
But you know what it is? There's got to be this moment where you have accept or reject. It's like a why, right? You come to this decision where you're presented with a new way of interacting with the world, right? Mm-hmm. And you can either say, okay, I'm going to accept what society does and say that this is wrong, or I'm going to reject that this type of movement is wrong. I'm going to try it out. For me, I remember I was watching the X Games for the first time. I'd never seen anything like this. And I watched this guy, Tom Fry, drop in on skates and do a huge backflip and land on this ramp and keep rolling, and I was like, what in the world is that? Oh my god, this is amazing. My life was forever changed. And, you know, I gotta wonder, did you have this moment where you were like, wait a second, there's another way to move around? There's other possibilities?
Yeah, definitely. Especially with parkour, because I mean, obviously I knew gymnastics, and I knew, like, there's bouldering, like, people would climb on stuff, like, I would climb on stuff as a kid, but to see that people took it up to that level and said, yes, we can move and vault, and, like, something that I wouldn't necessarily have thought of on my own, like, obviously I can climb over something, but the vaults that we learn in parkour, how effective they are in movement, and, like, the different ways they can make you move, like, get you from this little thing in so many different ways, like, it's just, it's mind-blowing, it really is, and, I don't know, a lot of people make analogies of, like, people, like, natives who don't have societies, who don't have roads, or, like, don't even wear shoes, or, and they move that way because they're out in nature and they don't have roads. Obviously, people aren't going to be doing, like, all the native people aren't going to be doing parkour and, like, the vaults and cat leaps and jumps and stuff like that, but it, like, the point is there's movement that's not walking. You know, walking or going to work, even if you drive or you bike or whatever, but I don't know, walking to a coffee shop, for example, you generally don't need to climb something to get to a coffee shop. And it's weird to think about that. I mean, obviously, society has developed so it's easy to walk, but just because you don't have to use the other ways you can move doesn't mean you shouldn't. You
know? It's so strange when someone is shocked by what you're doing, right? It's almost like you have... You shattered a part of their understanding of the world. It just doesn't make sense to them.
Yeah.
They can't process it. It's like, hey, I've been following these rules, and you're going to follow them too, darn it.
Yeah.
You know, like, if I'm walking here, you're walking here. Like, it's almost as if you're insulting them, right, by interacting with something in a way that they have never thought of or have never been taught.
Yeah, yeah, they see it, and they're like, nobody does that, and that's weird to them. It's like xenophobic to some extent. But, because it's unknown to them, and so I think a lot of people subconsciously think, like, hey, no one does that, there's a reason that nobody does that, and it's, they don't see it for the real reason. Well, it's a new thing, and obviously it's, like, just so happened to be in this time period, but, I mean, it's not really all that new.
It's like, know? People are afraid of what they don't understand.
Yeah.
So, if you look at it from a, you know, evolutionary perspective, if you're a little tribe in the woods hunting and gathering and, you know, it's like, well, you don't eat things because they could be poisonous, and so you stick with... And basically, having a routine and having this kind of fixed constraint set on reality was a survival mechanism, because it kept you from wandering into the bear's den. And
definitely.
So you need to know what you don't do, and so the way you learn that is just by watching what other people do. And so I think that reaction to, like... Because it's something that always... bug me as a kid is people like, well, people are afraid of things they don't understand. I'm like, well, why? I just didn't get it. Like, I wasn't afraid of things I didn't understand. I like them. They're cool, right?
Yeah.
So, like, why are most people, and I think it's, you know, it's because this instinct of, you know, trusting the people around you and that sort of thing is ingrained in many people, and the way they express it is by being distrustful of things that seem weird to them. You know?
Yeah, yeah, that's it. That's a really good way to put it.
Because, yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm sure all of us as kids, especially, and even now, are like, oh, cool, that's new, like, what is it? And then, yeah, you play with it.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people are like, I'm going to ignore that.
Yeah, it is funny, you know, you've got these people who are so curious naturally, and they tend to lead interesting lives, right?
Sure, yeah.
And you've got people who are afraid of everything, and they tend to lead pretty sheltered lives.
Yeah, and, yeah, it's weird. Like, the whole thing, the concept of novelty in life, like, people don't want to get bored. Like, one of the, like, to use old people as an example, people live longer and live better lives when they have things to do and, like, you know, they have new experiences. They always just try and live life. I don't know. It's weird. If I didn't do parkour, I wonder how I would feel, like, happy-wise, you know, because... like, you know, I can get bored of things pretty easily just because it's like, okay, I've seen that, yeah. You know, say you walk to school every day the same way, it's like, it gets boring. And especially if you didn't see the world in, like, a parkour sense, you know, with, like, parkour vision. just because everything would look the same, you know? Like, as I keep training parkour, I start seeing things differently, even if I've seen that spot a trillion times. Like, I've trained at Balboa for, like, 4 years now, and I still come up with new moves when I train. Or just, not new moves, but I don't know, I see the world, and I see everything like that. You know, I try and focus on every little part, details, or bigger picture, and
yeah.
I don't know.
Have you heard about this idea where geniuses, where genius comes from, it's not from the self. You're actually sort of a conduit, right? And this idea is that if you can hone your ability to be a conduit, the sort of genius will work its sort of, it will work through you, and you will almost just let go and let it do its thing, and it will do amazing things.
Yeah.
But a lot of times you'll talk to these math geniuses, people who will win Nobel Prizes, they win huge math awards, and they'll get these massive sums of money, they'll just give it away, and they'll just go live normal lives, and people will come out and they'll ask them, why would you just live a normal life? Why would you give this money away? And their answer is almost universally, listen, I'm just a conduit for this. You know, I didn't really do anything special to get this money. I don't deserve it. I'm letting this thing work its way through me. Do you ever feel like parkour or movement is just happening and you're just letting it happen, that you're facilitating it? Maybe the creativity aspects or other aspects? Or do you feel like it's very much you thinking and interacting with a space in a very specific way?
I think it's both. Sometimes, like a lot of the time, I'll look at something and consciously think of what to do, but other times I can just be walking and something in the corner of my eye will catch me and I'll just like, whoa, you know, and see something amazing, and I don't know. Like the whole concept of conduits was interesting because it's like you won't have an idea flow through you if you're a closed-minded person. You have to be kind of open-minded, and then once you actually let go and say, oh, there are other possibilities besides what I've always thought to be the right one, then like a lot of things happen, you know, a lot of wonderful things.
Yeah, a lot of the visuals that we're coming up with for this film, it's just like lightning is striking. Mm-hmm. We're just sitting around doing nothing. It's like, ooh, what about this idea? Ooh, and it's not us, you know, sitting down with any kind of formula or methodically planning it out. It's just being open to the idea, like you say, and then the idea presents itself.
Yeah.
It's almost like these ideas want to be brought into reality. And this is me being a little bit nuts, but, you know, it's very strange the way the creative process works. It's like, the more you try to force it, the less it might work, but the more you just enjoy it and you are open to these new things happening, the more they seem to just happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Like a good example, like obviously the editing and people emotion is going to be way crazier than my own personal videos, but even that, it's just like if you're trying to think of something, whatever it is, a transition or something you want to do, and you're stuck on the base idea, like, okay, this type of transition, and you try and tweak it a little bit, like, it's not going to work. You're trying to force something. But if you think, like, well, this is, A as opposed to B, and then you realize, well, oh, B is like this, and then you end up, like, at, like, what, E or something, with some new idea that is completely unrelated to A, but it works perfectly, you know, it's... Something happens like that.
It's funny how it plays out.
Yeah. That happens in parkour, too. A lot of times we'll... say a jump, a precision to a ledge, and you're falling back because you didn't quite make it on, and you can just like fall backwards. But at one point I jumped and fell back, but I just decided to lean back and kind of tilt my head over, and I ended up like cartwheeling down this wall. Ooh. And I was like, oh wow. And that led to a whole different style of movement that I was like, what if you did that on purpose, you know? And I don't know, it's a lot of fun, too. There's just a lot of things you can do with that.
Sort of like serendipity strikes, where you don't mean to do something, but it's just accidental, fake, call it whatever you want, but hey, it happened, and we're going to roll with it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and it seemed like that ability to just roll with things, you know, to deal with situations is something that you have to do. Mm-hmm. By your very nature. You talked about that front flip that Jacob was doing, where his foot slips a full 6 inches, but he rolls with it. He plays it out.
Yeah.
That's a theme that Ben talks about often, Master Ninja of the Nerdatorium. Is this idea of whatever the situation is, it's easy to give up, but it's always interesting, even if you're in a bad spot, to play it out.
Yeah, it's super cool like that. I feel like a lot of creativity, or like a lot of creative things in general are like that. Like drawing or painting, like when I'm sketching, if you draw a line a little wrong and it's not the picture you wanted, but it looks like something else, you go, oh, that's cool, I'll do that too. Some of the jobs I've done, like filming a McDonald's commercial, something wasn't working. They wanted me to do a specific flip, like a specific type of wall flip, but it wasn't working. And they're just like, you know, this isn't working. Just do whatever, like, would flow best in that space. And I was thinking, okay, well, just did some other move. And they're like, yes, that works much better, you know. And I think it's pretty common, especially in Hollywood. Like, I doubt that all the awesome things in films that you've seen were completely planned out. You know, a lot of it was accidents. It's like ad-libbing, too. Yeah.
It's one of my, in Empire Strikes Back, it's, one of the best ad-libs ever. Is when, they're pushing Han Solo towards that little thing, and they're going to freeze him in the block of carbonite. And Leia's like, I love you. And he just goes, I know. And that was just totally, he was just goofing around on the set. Like, that wasn't even, they didn't even talk about it. He was just messing with Lucas or whatever. So, yeah, I know. And then they throw him in. But that's the take they used because it was just so, awesome. You know?
Yeah. Similar to, have you guys seen Blade Runner?
Yeah.
Like, the ending scene of the main replicant, that super buff blonde dude, you know who I'm talking about? Yeah, up on the rooftop when it's raining and he jumps across and pulls Harrison Ford? Yeah, he pulls him up. That whole monologue that he does about him being a replicant and him seeing things that humans could never see and then it's all just going to be lost. Like, that whole monologue really deep that kind of made the movie was completely ad-libbed.
Off the top of his head.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's one of the greatest, thought up monologues, improv. It was amazing. Yeah.
And maybe it all comes back to just knowing how to play the dance between sort of having structure and letting things happen serendipitously.
Yeah.
So I think in that case specifically, this is why I think acting is an important life skill, right? Is because the guy, I don't know obviously, but he was probably had a little bit of method going on. And so he was actually immersed in that moment of being a replicant, right? And then.
Yeah.
So that way it's not like you just thought up this really awesome deep speech just off the top of your head. It's just what a replicant would say. It sort of makes sense, right? And the same way, if you're falling a certain way, it's like you weren't just in your mind, I should do a cartwheel in this wall. That'd be awesome. It would save my ass. It's just that's what you do because you're falling. And so when you're kind of in that constrained space, all of a sudden you see things that you wouldn't normally see because your field wasn't as focused.
And it seems like when the pressure's on, you have to react, and the stakes are a lot higher when you're falling backwards off of a big gap, right? And you must react, and you're very concerned about your well-being.
Yeah. I think all the things we've been talking about, I think balance is important. For instance, a lot of people feel like it's not okay to play, or they don't have time to play, or whatever. A lot of people don't like doing activities that they are really passionate about just because they might feel like they'll get sucked into it and will neglect other important parts of their life. But, playtime and exercise is definitely important, and so you have to find a balance. And same with this, same with new things, social stigmas, parkour, what is it? People don't see it. Just don't reject it right away. Find a balance between what you've thought of previously and this new thing. And, I don't know, same with this, what we're talking about now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, we've covered a lot in this conversation.
We've been all over the place.
Awesome. I can't believe it's already 1:10. All right, so we're probably going to wrap it up, and then we're going to meet with Lonnie later today, and hopefully we can have another podcast as well with you and Lonnie together tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely.
We'll keep everybody posted. But thank you so much for making time.
Thank you, guys.
It's such a pleasure collaborating with you on this project.
Likewise.
It's a little ridiculous just how easy and fun and natural it's been, and it feels like we're doing something very genuine and very special, and there's something about that. It just, with a lot of projects you'll work on, you'll kind of get bored of it or tired of it, but there's something about this project very specifically where I cannot wait to see you guys and hang out and talk about this and make it and get together and collaborate on just how we're going to do this specific shot or pull off this specific vision. Because one of the things that's been really nice about collaborating with you is, I'll occasionally rant, and you'll be like, "Right on, man! Yeah, let's explore that rant." And Ben's the same way, and maybe we're all just open to madness, and that's why this is all working.
Yeah, I think one thing too is I don't necessarily know what all the other projects you guys have done are about, but I think it might be so easy for easygoing on this project is because what the project is about is the same. For this, you want to do the project. It's something you want to do. You know you can do it. You know you can figure out how you're going to do it. And it's going to be fun. So you just, let's do it. And it's easy. And that's, exactly how parkour is. You want to do it. You can figure it out. And it's your goal. So just do it. And, easy style it. Don't even stress it. It's not something you got to force.
Yeah, hallelujah to that.
Yeah.
And on that note, Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to the Nerdatorium podcast, talking about people in motion. If people want to reach out to you, or if anyone's interested in collaborating with you on a project, do you have a blog or a specific method of contact?
Just an email for now. Okay. It's pjwhitecotton@gmail.com.
No spammers, no crazy people, please. Only sane people reach out to Paul.
Yeah, I'll find you. I'll parkour to you.
You can't get away. He's too fast.
Yeah, but definitely, yeah.
If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for the Nerdatorium, or you want to just talk about people in motion, you can reach us at thenerdatorium.com, where Ben and I are always blogging and having a good time and making podcasts and new technology. So we will be coming back at you pretty soon with another podcast, talking to Lonnie Tisdale. Is that
correct? Yes.
Yeah? Who's another epic person who does some amazing things in space and time. And it's definitely been a pleasure. Yeah. We'll talk to you again soon.
Cool. Thanks.
Cheers.
Cheers.